Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show, 839, David Allen, Chris Walton, Todd with 1D, manning the controls. This came out this morning. Obviously, a lot of stuff happened. You guys talked a little bit about it on Friday. Nate talked about it on Friday also, with Donald Trump sending 59 Tomahawk missiles into Syria. Now Iran calls on Syria to ensure Trump, quote, regrets his attack, after Secretary of State Rex Tillerson says the U.S. will hold to account any who commit crimes against innocence.
Okay.
So the folks of Iran, Russia, and Syria were not happy with that.
So next we're bombing the Congo, and then after that, what?
Well, and that's what I told somebody over the weekend.
I mean, I understand why he called for it, but it's a bit selective based on the things that have gone on in the world just over the last year, even.
It's like, okay, it was okay, I guess, if Assad blew up his people and killed them with regular bombs. But as soon as he started using chemical weapons, then he became a bad guy.
Well, and then,
or at least
and then,
one
and then,
worthy of
and then
Tomahawk
Russia
missiles.
And then Russia, who had promised to oversee Syria getting rid of chemical weapons, mm-hmm. and this is not what they meant, you know, by exploding them in town.
Yeah,
Syria. I mean,
you don't have to use them to get rid of them. You can just get rid of them
too, because they promised that Syria would have no more chemical weapons,
yes.
And then all of a sudden they're still using them.
And I told somebody Friday. I said, "Here's the deal." Like you, like a lot of people, not everybody, like a lot of people, I don't really have an issue with trying to get rid of Assad. I don't think he's a good guy. I think he's a bad guy. But I want to know the end game.
Mm-hmm.
Been burned too many times by presidents, whomever it may be, doing something without an end game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had the vacuum with Bush as soon as Saddam Hussein went away,
right?
And we saw what happened there. And then Obama and Muammar, my man Muammar, took him out.
Gaddafi, right?
And that didn't help. They have no end game. It's like, all right, you want to get rid of Assad.
Here's the deal. You do want to get rid of, I mean, just naturally, you want to get rid of a terrible dictator.
100% agree.
However, when you get rid of a terrible dictator in that part of the country, quite often it turns into
a worse dictator.
A strict Sharia law Islamic state.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people think is much worse than a dictator, because at least if you're nice to a dictator, he will leave you alone most
exactly.
of the time. If you criticize him and let him know that you're not on his side, of course he's going to, well, more than likely have you killed. But you can get by with a dictator, whereas you can't with the Islamic State. I mean, you know, if you walk out of the house, something you're doing is going to be against Sharia law.
Yes, and you will be beheaded or thrown off a building or something.
Yeah, because they're such nice people.
Yeah, and so I just. If you're going to get rid of Assad, who gets in there? Are you going to let
ISIS,
the Russians put
probably.
Somebody in there? I know, exactly. You're going to let the Russians put somebody in there? Does Iran put somebody in there? Do they have free elections like Iran and Iraq? I mean, Iraq had.
Yeah.
And
Or does it absolutely change nothing?
Or does it change nothing and it's a horrible vacuum?
Right.
Then the next question becomes, how far do we push it?
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously,
well,
destroyers
apparently.
Steamed over that way from Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Iran not happy.
And
they have nuclear weapons.
And we have what the Carl Vinson right now is
yes.
going to North Korea.
North Korea. So
well, it's going to Korea, so it's going to be somewhere.
In the waters over there,
it'll
yeah.
be in the water, yeah.
So
actually in North Korea.
So how many different dictators can we try to push out? Just two?
Well,
or is it just one?
I don't know. I have a friend who is Syrian. Now, he hasn't been there for a while, but
okay.
he used to have an importing business. Well, he still does. It's just kind of on hold at the moment. And he has family there, you know, and he's an American citizen now, but he was traveling freely back and forth between
okay.
the U.S. and Syria for some time. And according to him, he said things under Assad are bad because he's a dictator and all that involves. However, when it comes to actually organizing the country, it's kind of good that he's there, And it's, you know, it's like I always say, like back in World War II, they used to talk about how Mussolini was a dictator and a fascist, but at least for the first time ever, the trains run on time.
Yes.
And so people were trying to say something nice about it. And this is the same with Assad. They have a lot of socialism there, and people are taken care of in ways that if he were suddenly gone, they would no longer be taken care of.
Well, and the bottom
they'd
line,
they'd be able to do whatever they want, but they still would have nothing.
And the bottom line is, and you and I have talked about this before, Assad and Russia also want to get rid of ISIS. They don't.
Yeah.
They don't want ISIS in Syria.
Now our problem right now is that we want to get rid of Assad and ISIS, and Assad and ISIS don't like each other.
Yeah. So how do you balance those scales of justice?
Well, we could withdraw from the entire thing and just protect ourselves. But that's not really our habit, is it?
Yeah, not really what we do, and I don't know if it's...
I think it'd be cheaper.
I don't know if it's possible in 2017 to no longer be
just the price,
the world's policeman.
Just the price of the missiles. You know how much that cost the other night? $60 million.
59. They're $1 million apiece. It only costs $59 million.
Plus tax.
Oh. The government doesn't get a break? They don't...
I don't know how it works.
Tax. And the thing is, only 58 of them hit, so
just a missile
we wasted $1 million.
Well...
336-3700, 336-3700, 1-800-529-5264.
And the aeropuerto was still usable.
Yeah, because they went on bombing runs yesterday. £670 on your Verizon Wireless. What you do with Syria and Assad? Time to get one last look at traffic.
Why? This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
8:50 now at 670 KBOI. David Allen, Chris Walton. We are discussing Trump, Syria, Iran, and Russia, and all that that entails, what the end game there is. Carol in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI.
Thank you. The difference between being killed with conventional weapons versus nerve gases is the degree of brutality inflicted on the victims. All the people are killed in slow, agonizing ways, even those who had no part in the war at all, such as children. Nerve gases were even outlawed after World War I by global jurisdictions as a cowardly way to scorched earth policy. Just a savage brutality that wasn't going to be allowed for what you consider war anymore.
Now, if anybody uses chemical weapons, then you think the U.S. should intervene?
I think that at least should be considered for sure. If we know about it and we can do something about it, that makes good sense to me.
All right, Carol. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kent to Boise says that the end game is for the military-industrial complex to enrich themselves, then Armageddon.
That movie with Bruce Willis?
No, the actual Armageddon.
Oh, okay. That's going to be different.
The one with the horses and everything.
All right. Rich in Boise, you're on with David and Chris. How are you, sir?
Oh, good morning. Hey, conventional bombs incinerate people, scorch their lungs, kill. And the 90% of the casualties in war since like the 1800s have been civilian. You know, back in the old days when armies met on the battlefield, it was mostly the soldiers, but it's not anymore. But anyway, Trevor Noah on the nightly show, he said, here's a film clip to explain what's happening in Syria, in Syria and Russia and stuff. Did you see that? And
he showed a film clip.
He showed a film clip of the Three Stooges poking each other in the eye and hitting each other. It cracks me up to think of it because it was a perfect example of what's going on. And you're totally right. Saddam Hussein was a secular leader. Shia and Sunni Muslims lived side by side in Baghdad and got along. And we talked about how brutal he was, but there were so many factions in this country that he had to be. He couldn't put up with any nonsense. You know, there's no Al-Qaeda in Iraq when Saddam Hussein was there. There's just too many different factions and stuff. And I hate to say it, but sometimes maybe you should need somebody like that, you know. But
exactly. Sometimes, like you say, to keep everybody happy, you need to have somebody who's mean enough to keep everybody happy or at least everybody satisfied.
Well, you know, after there's war, after there's big things like that, you know, we declare martial law. We put the military in charge. And that's why, is because if things are so chaotic, you can't have you just can't. I mean, hey, I hate to say it, but sometimes you just can't have freedom unless things mellow out. And a dictator is a good way to get a country in order, but maybe not a good way to run a country forever. But
so, Rich,
know, I don't know.
Rich, what's the end game for the U.S. and Syria and Russia?
Oh, that's, I mean, I'm just like you. I've gave up on the thing that we can fix it. I mean, I would, you know, if I thought we could, there was times where I thought we could fix things, but we just can't fix things with military power. I've kind of decided. I don't know who do we say if we go in there, we help this revolutionary people, whoever they are. If we help them, what do you think they're going to do to the people who backed Assad? And you know that they talk about how Christians don't want to aren't coming from Syria. That's because Assad treated the minorities fairly. The Christians in Syria, they like Assad because he protected them. Once he's gone, the people that we're now helping, what are they going to do to the people who were standing up for Assad?
It's not going to end well, that's for sure.
And then it's going to end worse because then we're going to be involved.
Yep.
Then we're going to be to blame for it then.
All right, Rich, thanks for the call. I appreciate you calling in. Because he's right. If you back the rebels and the rebels win, then everybody who was on Assad's side is obviously against the rebels, and then the rebels will want to kill all those people.
Right. David of Boise says, how in the, I'll say, heck, does a missile cost $1 million a piece? Why aren't we making the missiles ourselves? And if we are, why are we being ripped off by our own people? Okay, these are cruise missiles. It's not like a shell.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like just something that goes in and knocks people over. This, you know, has a sophisticated computer program on board, and these are the ones that fly about 6 feet off the ground.
And they follow it by GPS the whole way.
Yeah, and the radar doesn't pick them up.
And it hits within a 5-foot radius of where they want it to hit.
Yeah.
So they're able to follow landlines and everything, and so it's high-tech. It's not just
They actually do cost $1 million.
Regular, like a bomb that the B-52s would have dropped in Vietnam or... You know, that B-17s would have dropped
in World War II. Not that I'm going to accuse the U.S. government of always shopping for bargains.
No, they don't. They don't do that.
So he's kind of got a point there.
Yeah.
He says, why not break out a few $500 bombs from World War II and drop those on the enemy? Maybe not the antiques themselves, but they seem to work just fine. Then, so why not make a batch of brand new ones in U.S. factories? Well, we still do that stuff, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't shoot those off from miles away on a ship.
No, you cannot.
Well, you can, but they're not going to get
anywhere. Exactly. Yeah. All right. We'll talk more about Syria in the end game when we come back. National news, then local news with Rick Worthington will be up next. Chris and I will be back after the top of the hour. Keep listening to 670 KBOI.
Talking about it.
They're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show, David Allen. Chris Walton with you.
Hello.
We are discussing Syria and the ramifications of that. I will tell you, I'm looking here in the Sun newspaper.
Which is from England.
Yes. Russia and Iran have said they will respond to further American military actions following the airstrike in Syria last week. In a joint statement, the command center for the two countries and allied groups said, we will respond to any aggression. The statement read...
So, let me get this straight just quickly here. The United States has sent some missiles into Syria... And because of that, Iran and Russia now say they're going to retaliate or answer. What is it they say they're going to do again?
They will respond to any aggression.
Yes. Okay.
So not to the 59 that we sent, but if there's another.
Oh, okay.
We crossed the red line.
Well, thank goodness we didn't hit 60.
Yeah. The statement read, what America waged in an aggression on Syria is a crossing of red lines. From now on, we will respond with force to any aggressor or any breach of red lines from whoever it is, and America knows our ability to respond well.
Now, the chemical weapons for Russia and for Iran, does that cross a line? Or is it okay if you do it to your own people?
Yeah, it's not.
Which, by the way, Iran and Russia have been known to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't cross the line because they back Assad and it's their own people. And he's trying to stop from losing power, which mm-hmm. neither Iran nor Russia want him to do. So this warning comes on the same day that a Russian politician warned that North Koreans could strike at any time. A 7-year-old Syrian girl tweeted her support for Trump's missile strike, and the president blasted claims his 59 missile strike on Syria airfield missed targets. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani.
They seem very careful. I mean, when those missiles were shot off, all 59 of them, apparently they were trying to avoid killing anyone if they could.
Yes.
Now, Syria reported they killed 6 people. Who knows if that was true or not?
Yeah, you're never really sure.
But they were trying not to kill people, but... You know, I thought, why not, wipe out some planes that are just sitting there, for one, mm-hmm. or why not wipe out the runway so the planes that are sitting there can't take off tomorrow? Or, you know, what did they hit? I know they hit stuff.
Yeah. If you saw the before and after, they hit a lot of buildings and took them out. Those buildings no longer exist.
Yeah, but what were those buildings for?
Well, I would think they were housing
planes?
A lot of the planes.
Oh, okay.
But
so hangars.
They gave 30-minute notice, and a lot of people were saying they probably moved the planes. And somebody tweeted out at the president or said something over the weekend about, I think it was Senator McCain, said you should have done more to destroy the runways.
Yeah.
Should have put holes in them.
Well.
And President Trump said, and I don't always agree with everything he says or tweets, but I think on this one he's right. But I would have to have an expert call in and let me know. It's very easy to repair those runways.
So
to just fill, and they
it's like
be,
John, like John McCain said, then you hit them again.
Yeah, but see, if you do that, now you have Iranian President Hassan Rouhani condemning the flagrant U.S. aggression on Syria, and saying that if it happens again, and they've got nuclear weapons, if it happens again, we'll do something about that.
Yeah, respond.
And I don't know.
And
I don't know what that
and
means,
probably not with a strongly worded letter.
No.
Okay.
Or a tweet at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Hey, here's a question for you.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to be consistent. And Trump himself has said, you know, one of the things that he thinks he's good at is the fact that when he gets new information, he changes his mind.
As all presidents probably should.
Well,
Obama did it.
However.
Bush did it. It happens.
People in Congress tend not to do it.
Well,
you know,
people
when you all
idiots.
Of a sudden, when you find out that what you ran on, people don't like anymore, you stick to it because that's what you ran on.
Mm.
Now, some people are for that. Other people think that's ridiculous. I'm fine with somebody changing their mind when they get new information. I mean, that's fantastic. You know, there's no need to stick with old facts. You know, when you've got some new information, you have a new opinion.
Yes.
And it doesn't necessarily need to be 180 degrees different. It can be 1 degree different.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just a little bit flexible because of what's coming in. Now, on the other hand, for the last 4 years or so, he's been saying to send missiles into Syria for any reason, be it chemical weapons or whatever, to send missiles into Syria for any reason would be foolish. We don't want to get involved. We don't need to be in somebody else's civil war, this, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden, even though this has happened, it's even happened more than one time during the Trump administration, they had good footage, good video of kids who were hurt by the chemical attacks, and I think that's what sent him over the edge.
Oh, I think so, too.
That's why he sent the missiles in the other night.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% that it was all that video from that attack.
Is that okay, or should he stuck to what he said before?
I'm torn on this because...
Should he have stuck to what he said before, is what I meant. Sorry.
Because... I never have agreed with using chemical weapons on your own. I didn't like it when Saddam Hussein used it on the Kurds in the northern part of the country.
Well, it's like the caller said, after World War I, you weren't supposed to use them on anyone, even the enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. I read about the origination of sarin gas. Obviously, we all know where it came from. If it's one of the worst things ever and one of the most evil things ever, where would it come from? The Germans during World War II, they were trying to come up with... something for a pesticide and ended up making sarin gas, and Hitler was giddy with it,
what
of
they
course.
What they considered pests were different than the average person.
That's true, too. That's true, too. I just and like Carol said, and I wasn't making light of it, because I think if you use conventional bombs on your own people and kill children, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Obviously, dying by sarin gas is a lot worse than a regular bomb.
Well,
but either
like
way,
somebody,
you're dead.
It's like somebody said, yeah, it's like that one guy who lost 22 family members. Regardless of what they had used, they killed them all, and he's never going to be the same.
Yeah,
obviously.
Exactly. So I don't understand the mentality. I mean, that'd be like President Trump bombing Arizona because Arizona wants to enforce the border at the, Mexico.
Or whatever
it might be. Yeah. And I know we had a civil war here, but such a different time. I mean, it's 1800s. Yeah. It's 2017 now.
It was 150 years ago.
How can you not be a better leader, even as a dictator, to not blow up your own people? How is that ever going to get you? If you're blowing up the rebels,
when dictators are doing something like that, it's because they can hear revolution talk.
Yeah.
They can hear that there's some kind of revolution in the air, and the people that are forming the revolution are starting to get backing from other countries. And so the first thing that a dictator does is eliminate the problem.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If you're fighting the rebels and you're killing the rebels and they're killing your soldiers, then that's one thing. I guess I don't understand the innocence. You're not going to get anybody on your side other than Iran and Russia. You're not going to get the rest of the world on your side when you're using sarin gas on people who are just going about their day in a market.
If you go out and if you're a dictator and you go out and you shoot one political opponent, people are going to think, well, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out and you kill indiscriminately in neighborhoods and things like that, people are going to think, wow, I'm going to keep my mouth shut for the rest of my life. It's to scare. It's a scare tactic. You scare people into falling into line.
So
now everyone hates you, but you still have power. And if power is what you want, then that's what you've got.
So how much do you want the U.S. involved in the Syrian?
I don't know. I like the fact
civil war.
I like the fact that we're nice enough to try to be humanitarians when an atrocity happens. However, like I said, we're a little bit selective when it comes to atrocities because there have been genocides all over the world that we didn't bother to get involved in. Depending upon whom, you know.
Yeah. And are we just going to send cruise missiles in every once in a while? Are we talking planes? Are we talking special forces? Are we talking boots on the ground?
This is what people wanted to know the other night. They wanted to know, well, are we at war against Syria now? And the answer is no, because Congress declares war.
Yes.
Not the president. The president can, he's the commander in chief, so he can order something like he did. However, you know, the next day, I guess, at least the Democrats in Congress were saying, no, you were supposed to check with us first and get an okay. And that would have taken like 10 minutes tops.
336-3700, 1-800-529-5264, #670 on your Verizon Wireless. How deep do you want the U.S. to go in Syria before we're in a little bit of a mess above our heads? We'll talk to Mark next on 670 KBOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
KBOI rewards code CHEMICAL, CHEMICAL, CHEMICAL. Go to KBOI.com, enter the keyword CHEMICAL, get your 5,000 rewards points.
Tim has written in to say, good morning, Chris. Thank you for saying that if the U.S. removes the dictatorship, it will be a mess in the country. If the Middle East doesn't want democracy, the U.S. has to leave them alone and let them cook in their own juices. U.S. government needs to pay off their debt instead of spending the money on the war. And he certainly has a point there that we do have some stuff to take care of in this country before we try to make everything right in another country. But also, yeah, I mean, if the only real organization you have right now is your dictatorship, and if you take it away, there will be chaos, then should we still try to get rid of the dictatorship?
Yeah, I don't like the power vacuum.
Well, we've
been burned on it too many times.
That's also, does the United States have a right to go into any other sovereign country and decide to change the regime?
Depends on what day and whom you ask.
Exactly right.
Because it changes all the time. Mark, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you this morning, sir?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. First off, I agree with you that there was no benefit for Assad to do this to his own people. It makes no logical sense whatsoever. You know, if you remember, it was the old senile saber-rattler warmonger John McCain, a Republican, and the left-wing media, Hillary, Obama, they all wanted to start a war with Russia over this. Okay, and then you had, again, the media backing him up. Here we have the media jumping all over this. You know, Savage, thank God, because I've heard this from military friends myself, if that was sarin gas, pictures that they showed of some of the people, the workers coming in there to help them, the white helmet guys, coming in there with exposed skin. They weren't in their protective suits at all. They were in their tennis shoes, pants on.
Well, they were panicking. They were trying to get the – they were trying to hose off the kids and just make sure that the damage was as little as possible.
Just what was in the air alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Would have killed hundreds and thousands, probably even more, just because of what that sarin gas does to people.
Yeah.
So we haven't heard that, have we? Okay, so even Savage pointed out it wasn't sarin gas. Okay, you know, we have the United Nations, which didn't do a, pardon my French, folks, but a damn thing.
That's not French.
They did not do a dang thing when it came to the Kurds being gassed by Saddam before we finally went in there and took Saddam out. There were thousands, probably tens of thousands of Kurds that had died. Saddam gassed the Iranians. He would use gas against them. There was no stopping by the United Nations. There were tens of thousands of soldiers killed over there from gassing. Why is it the United Nations in our great... You know, where were we back then, okay? You know, the United Nations back in, down in southern part of Africa. Do you remember a number of years back, it was, what is it, the Hutus and the Tutsis or something?
Yeah, they it's in the Congo.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of dead people as a result, hacked to death. The bodies were floating into Lake Victoria through the rivers there. It turned blood red. Where was the United Nations then? Egypt, Libya. Who wanted to have the who was supporting the Muslim Brotherhood and with the Arab Spring? We all remember the Arab Spring. It was Obama and Hillary.
Yeah.
Obama and company. They wanted the Muslim Brotherhood. The same people have been in and out of the White House who have been in the Department of Homeland Security, the Muslim Brotherhood. Then it took the Egyptian military to make a smart move and overthrow the Muslim Brotherhood and establish a more normal government.
Well, and this is
thanks for the call,
this is U.S. history, and this is just history in general. When it comes to having allies, you collect allies quite often because you have a common enemy. And you say, okay, we don't like these guys, you don't like these guys, therefore you're our friend.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
You remember in 1980 why the United States did not go to the Olympics in Moscow, Russia? It's because the Russian army was in Afghanistan.
Yep.
And we thought that was just awful.
Let's not talk about what happened next.
Well...
I know. No, I'm agreeing with you. I just don't want to talk about it.
Well, I understand.
Makes me sad.
But it seems hypocritical because we...
Yeah.
But it's like...
And
if
then
you,
they ended up...
You know, it's like if you watch Survivor or if you watch the first couple seasons like I did. People change alliances when it becomes more convenient or more advantageous to do so. And so just because, you know, a couple of years ago we had an ally doesn't mean that they aren't our enemy now and vice versa.
And I will tell you that sarin gas doesn't always kill hundreds of thousands. The last time it was used... outside of a civil war was 1995 in Tokyo. You remember the subway attack?
I do.
It only killed, I say only, just killed 12 people, injured 50, caused a lot of problems for 5,000 others, but it only killed 12. And there was a lot of sarin gas in that subway. 926 News with Rick is next on 670 K.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
9:36 now at 670 KBOI. Let's head to the phones. Pro-life, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you?
I'm very good. You know, here's what I think happened over there with the gas attack. I think the rebels, and they call themselves the Free Syrian Army, but they're really ISIS people. And the Assad regime plus Russia, they're the ones that are taking on ISIS mostly now. But anyway, I think that they had the chemical weapons in, stored there, and then so the Assad planes came and attacked their position and set off that the chemicals out into the atmosphere, you know, out into the environment and killed those people.
It's a possibility because, you know, all we know, we do know that government planes took off and were there doing something.
Right.
But we don't know actually who had the chemicals, so you're right about that.
Right. No, I don't know for sure, but that's my belief. And so for the Trump administration to just say that it was the Assad government that did that, that is really wrong. Now, I know over in Iraq, ISIS put about 100 and some people in a house and then blew it up, people that they didn't particularly like, and then they blame it on the allies, you know, on their enemies. Those people have no compunction. They have no sensibility about anything.
Scruples?
Yeah, scruples. They just, now the Assad regime, they have never done anything openly against the United States. And so I think that it's an impeachable offense, I think, for Trump not to go to the Congress and get permission to do anything about regime change in Syria. I think that he ought to just stay clear away from that and even get renewed permission about going after ISIS and really go after them. But I just think that this is ridiculous what they're building up. And I'm not for Trump anymore. I just think that he's gone clear down off the charts being sensible.
All right, Pro-Life. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Got an instant message here from Nate, not the one that works here, different one. Nate says, just been listening to your discussion on Syria. I have to put my two cents in. I recently retired from the Army and did two tours in Iraq. A lot of comments and calls from the listeners are very uninformed and overly simplistic. The chemical attack was probably not nerve gas, as victims die within minutes, not hours. It has been commented that this was more likely a toxic gas, such as phosgene, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is a choking agent and can take hours, if not longer, to kill and leave survivors very damaged. It makes no sense for Assad to have attacked his own people. He would have nothing to gain from that action. Well, except intimidation.
Yeah.
It should have been more positively confirmed as to who did the attack. It would not be the first time that ISIS, ISIL, or any of the other radical Islamic groups attacked civilians or staged attacks to bring criticism against their enemies. Assad may be a dictator, but when you have violent factions fighting, it takes an iron fist to rule them. He did not put up with terrorism. As for the comments on the Tomahawk, obviously the callers have no knowledge of advanced weaponry and the cost of them. One would be hard-pressed to find a large weapon such as a bomb or missile for $500. And it would be ridiculous to try to use World War II vintage explosives as they would be unstable. Plus, those have been disposed of by now. Governments only change when the people want and force the change. Why is it up to the U.S. to intervene in foreign civil wars that pose no national security risk to us? Isn't that what the U.N. is supposed to be for? That is rhetorical, as I consider the U.N. a joke, a paper tiger. What about the Arab Gulf States alliances? Why do none of the Arab countries assist with trouble in their neighborhood? It would be a major mistake, in my humble opinion, to get us involved in a war in Syria. Our involvement in Iraq did not do as much as we had hoped. I was told many times by Iraqis that as soon as the U.S. leaves, they will be settling scores and fighting each other as they have for thousands of years, which happened. Change won't occur in the Middle East and Southeast Asia until the people want to help themselves. Well, enough of my thoughts for now. And again, that wasn't actually Nate. That was actually Wayne using Nate's account.
Oh, okay.
So there we go.
Well, there you go. I don't know, because what Pro-Life said is true. We don't know if it was Assad who used those, whatever chemical it was. We don't know that for a fact.
It appears, though, that from that very airfield that was bombed later, that there were planes that did take off. They did drop something in that neighborhood, and that neighborhood was hit with some kind of chemical weapons. So you put two and two together, and you say, well, they used chemical weapons. But I think Pro-Life was the first one to bring up that, you know, maybe they hit them with conventional bombs, and somebody on the ground set off the chemical weapons to make it look bad. But as other people have said, you know, dead is dead.
Because the two attacks in Egypt over the weekend that ISIS took credit for, those were just suicide bombers at Christian churches.
Yeah.
So again, they're not above and beyond doing whatever they need to do to kill innocent people.
There's way too much footage of those, by
exactly.
the way.
Randy and Jerome, you're on 670 KBOI.
Yeah, good morning. This situation in these Middle Eastern countries is probably possible for most Westerners to understand because of their culture and their and they're ethical, they're religious. I mean, their politics and their religion are very, well, it's impossible to separate those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thousands of years of animosity between those religious sects, they don't overlook those. You know what I mean?
So, mm-hmm.
so it's a matter of, you know, in 1980 we supported the Iraqis against the Iranians. Remember the gas attacks there? So I guess what I'm saying is different different year and time, same situation as, you know, look back 1916, you know, the Sykes-Picot Agreement, where they divided up those countries and made borders, you know, the French and the British did 1916. So really it's a fool's errand to really try to get involved in this stuff other than, I mean, who uses gas when? You know, when does it make it right? When does it make it wrong? You know, when do we support? When do we turn, you know, when do we turn our, ignore it? When do we retaliate against it? I think it's very hard to understand. It doesn't make much sense to me. That's just my personal opinion.
All right, Randy, thanks for the call.
Appreciate it. Jim in Boise says, I go along with others in that we have enough problems here in our own country. We have no business trying to police the world. That's what the UN is for. Stay out of Syria. Now, we are part of the UN. So if the UN has a peacekeeping force, now the UN never goes to war as far as they're concerned.
Exactly.
But they do have peacekeeping forces that go in and keep the peace by shooting people or something. So, well, I mean, you know, I'm being a little facetious, but that's what they always call them.
Yeah.
Like in Vietnam, they had UN peacekeeping forces and in Korea in the 50s.
All right. We still have time for your call. 336-3700, 1-800-529-5264. Got about 10 minutes left in the show. Give us a call. It's 944 at 670 KB.
Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. Rush Limbaugh comes up at 10 on 670 KBOI.
949, David and Chris with you. Let's go to the phones. Hank in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI.
Good morning. I would say that the implications of striking back go beyond just the Syrian situation. There has to be a message that if there's such a chemical attack or a dirty bomb is done on us, we will definitely respond to it. And this is the point beyond Syria. As far as the ISIS or Assad, no matter who you put in there, it's going to be bad or badder. I mean, I don't believe in sending ground troops there, but use of mass weapons of mass destruction has to be regarded as intolerable, and I think that Trump was absolutely right in doing what he's doing. But I think I also take the point of the people who are voicing apprehension about getting involved in too many wars. I think we are stretched too thin, but I think that we have to do this in regards to when ISIS is looking for a dirty bomb with nuclear deterrent, basically uses a terrorist weapon against us. I think that this has to be pressed home. And as far as Korea is concerned, real quickly, I think that the Korean bombing is to threaten us, to prevent us from intervening in case they want to reunite the Korean peninsula under their rule. And I think it's basically to neutralize us as their ambitions. And we can't tolerate this either, because their ambitions as far as getting nuclear devices, or I think sooner or later we're going to probably have to do a strike against North Korea.
Well, and North Korea has said publicly, or Kim Jong-un has, or somebody said it anyway, that one of their goals is to be able to get a missile system that will fire a missile that will hit targets in the U.S. And since they've said that, it's like, okay.
And they actually did come out over the weekend saying that the Syria attack by the U.S. is exactly why they do all their missile tests and why they're doing everything they do so that they can protect themselves. So countries that – thanks for the call, Hank. We appreciate it.
But they do. They say it was an act of aggression to try to at least send a message to the guy who used chemical weapons against his own people. And the message is don't, I guess.
Yeah, but like many people have said on the phone and you see in instant messages, is that really our job? To send that message.
And again, that's very debatable.
Yeah. Steve in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you today?
Good. You know, I was thinking pro-life had the same answer I was going to say. I wouldn't put it past the jihadis, ISIS, whoever you want to call them, of doing that and changing blame. That's a good war tactic. It's kind of like guerrilla warfare. You're in the trenches and you're making noise and chaos, and that's what the whole Arab Spring thing over the last 10 years has been, to just shake up and put other people in power in those countries, Libya, Egypt. I mean, you can go right down the line, all the nations that have fallen in that Middle Eastern area. And it, to me, is all related to the jihad that's going on. You know, there's there are several sects of people over there and religions. And to me, the way to stop this is to take the Muslim leadership and capture them and say, listen, you guys call for this jihad to end, or we're going to take you away.
Well, and you have to separate too. I mean, there are Muslim leaders. There are Muslim leaders who remind me more of Christian leaders in that they're somewhat, you know, at least they have some sensibility, it seems. And then there are the ones who want Sharia law. Like, I don't know if you saw last night, there was a guy. They were on one of the shows who was from Indonesia, and they're trying to turn Indonesia into a Sharia law state, and they're all for it. And they ask him questions about, you know, what about this kind of cruelty and this kind of atrocity and this? And they're like, well, it's all in the name of God, so it's fine.
In Allah.
Well,
and there's the distinction, you know. This is a religious war, and that's what's happening across the world. And, you know, they've been pushing for this caliphate for, I don't know, 30, 40 years.
Or since the 7th century, one of the two.
You know, it's been a while. Yeah. You know, just in my lifetime, I've seen it. And, you know, it's hard to fight an enemy when you can't tell who he is.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's the problem with this war. We don't know who we're fighting.
Yep. Thanks for the call, Steve. We appreciate it, brother. Thanks.
I think you mentioned that earlier, or somebody did anyway, that there was a time when there were just rules of war. There were just things that you did.
Yes.
Like, you didn't declare war against somebody unless you were a country,
yep.
for one thing.
Yep.
Or you formed a new country, like, for instance, when the Americans did. And when it was time for war, you sent your army out to the battlefield where it was agreed upon, and they sent their army out to the battlefield, and you kept fighting until somebody gave up.
Yeah.
And that was a battle. That was the war, or till, you know, somebody retreated, and then you had another battle. But I think it started in North America, where it's like we try to win, not just try to do it fairly now.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, the Viet Cong were like that.
Robert, you have 60 seconds. What do you got for us, sir?
Well, I served in South Korea for 2 years. And I can tell you, I served the closest base to the DMZ, Dongducheon, Camp Casey. They don't need any missiles in North Korea. They've got 3.9 million soldiers between 8 to 14 miles away from that DMZ. They got 70,000 pieces of artillery, 10,000 jets, 70,000 mobile rockets. If they want to attack and unite South Korea, they could do it in 48 hours. There ain't nothing we could do. Every American troop,
does,
all 53,000 of them, would be dead.
What does South Korea have?
South Korea has about 800,000 troops, but most of them aren't active. Everybody in South Korea, every woman and man, is mandatory to do 2 years in the service.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of countries are like that.
Yes, Israel, that kind of a deal, because they don't have the population. So even when you're older, 24, 25, you can still grab a gun.
All right, Robert, thanks for the call. Those are scary numbers when you think about it.
Yeah.
All right, coming up next, national news, local news, then Rush Limbaugh. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about the weekend events. Then Michael Savage and Nate this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.